You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Our passage today details just one of some of the most astounding displays of ingratitude in the whole Bible. Moses has just led the Hebrews out of slavery in Egypt. They've witnessed God dramatically protecting them with a pillar of fire, splitting the Red Sea as an escape route, and then wiping out the pursuing Egyptian army. A few days later, when the only water they could find was undrinkable, the people started grumbling. "Sheesh, some leader this Moses guy is." So God instructs Moses to throw an enchanted branch into the muck and turns the otherwise bitter water sweet. Still not good enough. A month or so later, remember, this is just the beginning of what turns out to be a 40-year stint in the desert, there's more complaining. In the Numbers version of the story, all the people can do is kvetch, "Oy vey, all the meat we used to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt that cost nothing. The cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, oh, and the garlic. Why did the Lord bring us out into the wilderness only to kill us? Wouldn't it be better just to go back to Egypt?" They claim that it's all been a giant ruse and demand an answer from Moses and his brother Aaron. "What are you guys trying to do? Kill us all?" And worse, they suggest that God is somehow in on it. So, our passage picks up where God and the beleaguered brothers are trying to appease the people and work out a solution. The result is quail miraculously descending for meat every evening, and then this flaky substance called manna appearing every morning for bread. And it's so well coordinated that double the manna appears on Friday morning, so they won't have to work on the Sabbath to collect it come Saturday, which is some obvious foreshadowing because we don't get the Ten Commandments and honor the Sabbath for another four chapters. The bottom line, the people are a bunch of, and I don't know if I'm using this phrase correctly, kafui tova, but it basically means ingrates. They fail to appreciate what has been done for them and would rather go back to being slaves, where at least they have leeks and onions, instead of trusting the mystery of the divine that even though it's a struggle, keeps coming through for them over and over and over again.
Our words of wisdom are from Exodus chapter 16, verses 2 through 15.
The whole congregation of the Israelites complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. The Israelites said to them,
"If only we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots and ate our fill of bread, for you have brought us into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger."
Then the Lord said to Moses,
"I'm going to rain bread from heaven for you, and each day the people shall go out and gather enough for that day. In that way, I will test them, whether they will follow my instruction or not. On the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather on other days."
So Moses and Aaron said to the Israelites,
"In the evening, you shall know that it was the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt. And in the morning, you shall see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your complaining against the Lord. For what are we that you complain against us?" And Moses said,
"When the Lord gives you meat to eat in the evening and your fill of bread in the morning, because the Lord has heard the complaining that you utter against him, what are we Your complaining is not against us, but against the Lord.
Then Moses said to Aaron,
Say to the whole congregation of the Israelites, Draw near to the Lord, for he has heard your complaining.
And as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the Israelites, they looked towards the wilderness, and the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. The Lord spoke to Moses and said,
I have heard the complaining of the Israelites. Say to them, At twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall have your fill of bread. Then you shall know what I am, the Lord your God.
In the evening, the quails came up and covered the camp, and in the morning there was a layer of dew around the camp. When the layer of dew lifted, there on the surface of the wilderness was a fine, flaky substance, as fine as frost on the ground. When the Israelites saw it, they said to one another, What is it? For they did not know what it was. Moses said to them,
It is the bread that the Lord has given you to eat.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Okay, so two friends met while out on a walk. One looked sad and almost on the verge of tears. The other man said, Hey, how come you look like the whole world has caved in? His sad friend says, Let me tell you, 3 weeks ago, an uncle died and left me $50,000. Well, said his friend, that's not bad at all. Well, hold on. I'm just getting started. 2 weeks ago, a cousin I never knew kicked the bucket and left me, after taxes, $95,000. That's great, said his friend. I'd like that. But wait. Last week, my grandfather passed away, and I inherited almost $1 million. So why so sad? Asked his friend. Well, this week, nothing. I would say it's begun again this weekend, but it's actually beginning earlier and earlier every year. If you notice, the Christmas decorations go up before Halloween, sometimes in August. Black Friday has slopped over into Thanksgiving and before. The annual rush for more has begun. More for less. More than them. All fueled by the notion that more somehow means happiness. More means better, and that more eventually leads to contentment. Now, I'm not telling you anything you don't already know when I say that the success of our consumer culture depends on one major psychological strategy, creating dissatisfaction. Tech companies, influencers, advertisers, and cultural inertia in general are all in the business of creating an at least we had leeks and onions level of frustration and resentment. In the process, we are robbed of one of the most elusive achievements of the spiritual life, contentment. Especially this weekend, shoehorned in between Black Friday and Cyber Monday, it seems like everything is focused on, quick, get those dream gifts and bucket list items now, before it's too late. If you miss out, let us tell you about all the ways you're going to regret it. But sometimes it seems like whatever season in life we're living in, the message is that I'll be more content when I finally have fill in the blank. For kids, it's often a particular game or toy. For adults, it might be a particular life experience. But it's all part of our primal urge to hoard more stuff. Just in case, you know. And truth be told, not being content was probably one of the things that kept our hunter-gatherer ancestors alive long enough to become our ancestors. But today, we live in a culture where most of our basic needs are met. The rest is mostly a matter of degree, and we want what we want when we want it. Take a look at our story today. First off, let's remember that it's a story, and it's told by at least a couple of storytellers and was cobbled together over hundreds of years. There's no evidence archaeologically or historically that there were ever Hebrew slaves in Egypt, let alone that they wandered lost in an area smaller than the size of West Virginia for 40 years. My Hebrew scripture professor, Harold Beck, used to say, "You couldn't get lost in the peninsula of Sinai if you tried. I've been to the top of Mount Sinai. From there, you can see the Gulf of Aqaba on one side and the Gulf of Suez on the other. Anybody who gets lost there deserves it." And why did the creators of this origin story portray the people as deserving of being lost? It's not because they lacked GPS. It's because they lacked something spiritual, and that is contentment, satisfaction, trust. Let's start with the manna. Nobody quite knows what manna was supposed to be, mainly because it's in the same literary category as the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Lots of people have tried to connect it with something in nature. Sap that oozes out of tamarisk tree limbs at certain times of the year, or a white coriander-like seed that tastes like honey. But again, if you try to explain it, you miss the whole point of the story and the humor. Manna is not greeted with universal joy. In the Numbers version of this story, the Israelites are asking, hey, where are my onions, my leeks? You know, given the choice of freedom without onions or slavery with onions, I choose slavery, thank you very much. So when the Israelites first saw the manna, they say, What's this? Well, what we know is that verse 4 says that this bread was designed to test how well the Israelites could learn to obey God. Manna was the ultimate in perishable food. The people were to gather only that which they each needed for one given day. No more, no less. If they tried to save any overnight for the next day, it would go bad and get wormy. No amount of pre-planning, hoarding, or storage on their part would help. One day at a time. That's it. So it's a trust issue, and one that the Hebrews struggle with over and over again in the story. It's like the phenomena of the poor college student at the wedding reception or all-you-can-eat buffet. You go way overboard just piling your plate full because you aren't convinced, sometimes with good reason, that another good meal was a sure thing anytime soon. Today's object lesson is for the Israelites to learn to trust, to take it one day at a time. And it should be noted that it took them 40 years to learn the lesson. Puritan Jeremiah Burroughs wrote, "Contentment is a sweet inward heart thing. It's a work of the spirit indoors. It's a box of precious ointment, very comforting and useful for troubled hearts in times of troubled conditions." Our troubled hearts live in a culture that gins up troubled conditions, that tries to convince us that material possessions or outward recognition or fulfillment of our exact expectations is the only way to feel a sense of satisfaction. Contentment is then inevitably short-lived. There will always be something else that is better, or someone who has something more desirable than what we have, leading to feelings of dissatisfaction. So, because of the world we live in, contentment can be as foggy, fleeting, and frustrating as a dream, mainly because people don't know where contentment comes from. Do you know where contentment is made? At the Satis Factory. Okay. Jesus doesn't talk a lot about contentment, but he does allude to it in the Beatitudes when he says, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst, not for leeks or onions, but for righteousness, for they will be satisfied." And the Greek word that Matthew uses is kortazo, literally filled or content, as after a good meal. But hungering for righteousness is a pretty high bar when most of us are spending our precious mental energy on grousing about how things aren't as good as they used to be, or fretting about all the things that might go wrong in the future. Who has time for righteousness? One of my first spiritual directors, Bill Martin, used to tell a story that reveals the mysterious source of contentment. Once upon a time, the district attorney of the heavenly court, Ha-Satan, challenged the Creator God on having gone overboard blessing these human beings he created. Ha-Satan said, "It's not fair to have blessed these creatures with so much. If you expect their love and trust to be genuine, to really mean anything, they need challenges. You should curse them as well." The Creator God said, "I have." "What are you talking about?" demanded Ha-Satan. The Creator God said, "Of all my creations, they are the only ones that I've gifted with the capacity to look into the future and to remember the past." Ha-Satan laughed. "That doesn't sound like a curse to me." But Creator God wisely noted that with those gifts come the abilities to become incapacitated with anxiety about the future and overwhelmed with regret about the past. They will be tempted to spend so much time worrying about the future and obsessing about the past that they'll seldom find time to be in the present moment. And the only time you can be content is in the here and now. Worrying about the future and regretting the past are the antithesis of contentment. On the road to wholeness, peace, gratitude, and contentment are an awareness of the simple blessings of life, here and now. A gorgeous sunrise, a fleeting glimpse of that hummingbird outside your window, the birth of a child, appreciation for moments of grace and righteousness. Imagine how alive life would become if we could discipline ourselves into an awareness of more of life being equivalent to those kinds of moments. But here's the challenge. Contentment is put in jeopardy whenever we tie it to a particular plan. Let's call it Plan A, the way we want things to go in our lives, the particular benchmarks that the culture has conditioned us to strive for. And you know what your Plan A is, whether you've articulated it or not. It's deeply subconscious for most of us. Plan A, for instance, is to have a warm, delightful family night. But then reality sets in and demands that we have to adopt a Plan B, controlling our temper and our disappointment when arguments threaten to derail our expectations. We all crave plan A. But more often than not, real life means adapting to plan B. No one plans to have a child with severe learning disabilities. No one desires regularly ruined plans due to bouts of migraine headaches or enduring the sudden disintegration of a satisfying career or a terminal disease or the souring of a long-term relationship. Like the Israelites in the desert, it's easy to become bitter and complain when our hopes and expectations are not met. But guess what? This story is about knowing when to move to plan B. The Israelites didn't just sit down and say, manna, let's just stay here in the desert. No, they were moving from slavery to freedom. And while manna was not their plan A, leeks and onions were, it was a solid plan B to keep them alive in the desert and get them to the promised land. And don't be confused. This is not a spiritual discipline of lowered expectations. Contentment helps us see the present more clearly, freeing us from anxiety about the future or regret about the past, so we can get to a place we couldn't even have imagined back in Egypt. As we hurtle into the holidays with all its wish lists and expectations, this story reminds us of the season's biggest get, a sense of contentment. And that true contentment is not to be found in the future or in the way things used to be, but right here and right now. In a deep sleep, Mullah Nasruddin smiled as he dreamt of a disembodied hand carefully placing large, glistening coins into his purse. One, two, three? Nasruddin was counting gleefully. Seven, eight, nine? When suddenly the hand stopped. What? Exclaimed the disappointed Nasruddin. 10! I must have 10! But as he started wrestling with the hand, screaming, I told you I must have 10! He woke up with a jolt. Panicked, he immediately lay back down and closed his eyes tightly, muttering, okay, 9. Not 9 is fine. Truly, we have been blessed. We can dream, plan, and see visions of the future. We can also remember with joy and satisfaction profound moments and comforts from our past. But we've been cursed as well. The antidote to anxiety, regret, and dissatisfaction is right here, right now, in the awareness of the mystery of the sacred, the gift of life, and the irreplaceable, unrepeatable richness of this moment. Be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.wepuTloveFirst.org.